Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This ship collected 5 different life forms from the darkest corners of the universe. Monsters.
Collision imminent.
Invasive species. Predatory. We don't lock them down, it will be too late.
Beware, spoiler phobes! You have stumbled into A Storm of Spoilers, a podcast currently covering the FX on Hulu series Alien Earth. Kirsch loves it when a plan comes together, using Morrow's plot with Slightly Smee and Arthur to capture the Weyland-Yutani soldiers and a new xenomorph. Joe leads Wendy and an existentially malfunctioning Nibs to the docks with the xenomorph we call Michael in tow to take out any pesky soldiers. Boy Cavalier has plans to talk to the Eye, and Wendy is mad that her brother lightning gunned a hissing Nibs as we head into the finale. This podcast is split into calm and storm sections, and the first calm section, we will only be talking about the 7 episodes of the series up to the newest episode of Alien Earth titled Emergence. Then, after ample warning and at the displayed timestamp in the notes, we enter the storm section where Neil and I will speculate where the rest of this season goes and how it connects to the wider franchise. Why, hello again. I'm Dave Gonzalez, and I want to know who told the Eye taking a poo is called a number 2.
And I'm Neil Miller, and when I was a kid, I also used to hide things under the bed that I was ashamed of. And welcome back to A Storm of Spoilers. Before we get started, a little bit of housekeeping. You're, of course, hopefully listening to this on Wednesday. If not, that's when these podcasts come out. You can also get these podcasts if you would like a more visual version of them on YouTube. YouTube.com/@DaveandNeil, DaseAndNeil. Is the address for our YouTube channel. Thanks to everyone who has gone over there and liked and subscribed and commented. That helps the algorithm send us into the YouTube manosphere or whatever it is. So, you know, that's great. If you'd like to see our faces as we record this episode, you can also, and I promise this is actually happening this week. Last week had some technical difficulties. I am going to be streaming Alien Isolation this week. Wednesday night, around 8 o'clock this evening, twitch.tv/Neil Stradamus. I will be facing off against the Xenomorph. We will absolutely be finishing this game. This is my second attempt to finish this game in my life, and I'm not going to let this game defeat me a second time. So join me.
This seems like a marketing strategy to line up with the conclusion of Alien Earth here. We were like, look, I had some technical difficulties, but we're back.
Yeah. So
Alien Isolation.
Yeah. I mean, I have this week, I have next week, and then we're going to do an Alien Earth recap episode the following week. So I got 3 weeks left of Alien vibes. So I think that I'm can very much get it done. If you'd like more from Dave and I, you can join us at patreon.com/DaveandNeil for more content, more bonus content from stuff that we've done in this feed. You can also get some very special things that we've done in that feed alone, including our Twin Peaks rewatch project, which was my first time going through Twin Peaks, which was great. We also recently wrapped up a Leftovers watch project where both of us watched The Leftovers for the first time. And we're going through Hannibal for me for the first time. And you can also get some really great other pods, like our weekly adventure podcasts, where this month we're going through samurai movies. It's been really fun. And most importantly, access to our patron Slack, which is our wonderful community with all kinds of absolutely cool human beings and channels for all manner of topics that you can discuss in pop culture, politics, cooking pet photos, pretty much every cool thing that you'd want to do on the internet, but can't really do on social media anymore because it's a toxic wasteland. So join us on Patreon if you'd like more. All right, here's how you can get in touch with this show. You can send us a raven, as always, to stormofspoilers@gmail.com. Some of you did. We're going to read those here in a little bit. You can also review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. The rule, of course, is leave us a 5-star rating. Say whatever you want. This week, somebody did. Somebody said some nice things. Someone named Cat Plus said, and they titled their review, "Hello and Welcome," which feels just perfect for us. A 5-star review said, "I am a dedicated fan from my rewatch of Lost last year, and I'm also thrilled that I've been able to engage with Dave and Neil here. I miss Joanna, of course, who wouldn't, but I think you two are doing a fantastic job with Alien Earth, and I've even recruited my husband, who I knew would love you both. I recommend anyone who hasn't yet watched Lost to go back and rewatch it with The Storm as your companion. I'm also catching up on The Last of Us Season 1 now so I can listen to the Season 2 pods. I listen to this pod and House of R each week to help me think about all of the fun answers and lore of the Alien Earth series." Sorry, not a very coherent review. I disagree. But last week, apparently, there were no reviews. So I'm going for a quick one just to let you know that there is, all caps, no apathy here. Thank you very much for expressing your no apathy. We greatly appreciate it. So there you have it. Some housekeeping. And it's time to kick off the storm. Dave, I think we should start with this theory about how this thing's going to end.
Sure. Yeah. Let's start with looking ahead.
Because we got a pretty interesting ending theory from Greg, which most notably involves what I think I might even have mentioned on this podcast is my request for a rock song to close out an episode that I would love to see. So this one, Greg speaking directly to me, it feels. And Greg says, "I think it's clear now how the show must end. Boy Cavalier, somehow still alive, running through hallways, stalked by a xenomorph. He rounds a corner to a distant exit. Someone is there, but not facing him. It's Adam. He desperately calls out to him to hold the door. Adam slowly raises an arm and seals the door shut. Boy Cavalier arrives and screams for him to open it. Adam slowly turns toward him, and through the door's window, we see the eye. Cut to the xenomorph rounding the corner. The last scene is a cockpit view of eyeball Adam flying off in a spaceship. Cue AC/DC's Back in Black." This one, a little silly, but it gets to AC/DC's Back in Black, which I greatly appreciate.
I mean, I think it's only silly up to eyeball Adam flies a spaceship into space.
Sure.
Like, everything else seems very, very plausible. Like, a little porthole reveal moment, that seems like something that could happen.
And it does bring us to, I think, one of the big questions of the week, Dave, which is when we leave off with Boy Cavalier in this episode, he seems to have an idea of who he wants to introduce to Mr. Octo, Ms. Octo, however you want to say it. Who do we think that is?
Well, at first he seems like he's a little interested in having it be what he says, like a low IQ person to judge the difference. But then at the end of the episode, when he thinks that he has like the perfect person, obviously I'm somewhat limited in, we are down Arthur. So there's one fewer human that's actually part of the cast of characters. So it can't be Arthur. Could it be Adam? I think so. But I think if he was interested in putting it in Adam, we would have seen it as more of a spontaneous, he just would have done it while he and Adam were like looking at the thing. So I'm a little worried for the dame because she seems to have pissed him off.
Seems to be one of the few humans left, for sure.
Yeah, one of the few humans left and has pissed him off. Unless he is like, he's just going to try to shove it in Morrow.
Sure.
That would be the only other,
well, I guess, or Joe.
Person that has the interface. Or Joe.
Yeah.
Oh, you think it's going
to... I mean, poor Joe.
Joe,
yeah. Listen, Joe has been abused and obviously is sort of the originator of needing a union, but we'll get to that. This actually brings me to our other Raven that we got this week, because Phelan, a long time, many time writer in her, Phelan wrote in with a theory about a kind of an alternate theory about who could be getting the Ms. Octo introduction. And so here's what Phelan had to say. The real topic I wanted to float is a stormy long shot bet for the finale. I think Boy Cavalier is going to get hijacked. He was the one who introduced the concept of intelligence of the host affecting Mrs. Octo's processing power. He's the smartest motherfucker on Neverland, and he moved her to his office. All the pieces are there. Boy said in a previous episode that prodigies are geniuses because they're children. If he believes that, then he's not racing against death, but against maturity, a much closer obstacle. Take the hybrid technology out of the equation for a second. If you were an egocentric boy genius and you wanted to preserve your childlike wonder forever, how would you do that? Well, stasis pods can preserve you for centuries. And if you could clone a copy of yourself with your memories and intellect, you could let that proxy run your company while you stayed preserved. That copy gets too old. Fuck it, make another one. Kind of like how Peter calls the Lost Boys when they get too old. He's doing a prestige. I think the real goal was always beta testing the transfer process for him. Because if you're the most important person in the world, you don't test it on yourself. Which is why I think Boy will get hijacked, but next season we'll either get another Boy clone or potentially meet Boy Prime. Imagine Boy versus iBoy. I could be wrong, but when the egg responded to his presence, I think that was telling us he's not a synth. End of email. I think this is fun because it would be an interesting twist, especially because we're running out of humans, for there to be another version of Boy Cavalier. And this is, I think, something we've talked about a little bit in the storm. I don't necessarily know if we've talked about it in the column yet, but sort of a pet theory that I've had, which is that maybe Boy Cavalier is a synth. Is a hybrid and has used the technology on himself. But this introduces the idea that maybe there is either a copy or a clone potential, because we haven't really dealt with any cloning.
Right. But that's the one thing that we haven't dealt with in the alien universe quite yet, I don't think.
And I honestly don't know if there's enough time in one episode left, even if it's going to be longer than this very short penultimate episode, to introduce the concept of cloning to the universe. But here's one thing we have not addressed. We don't yet know if it is possible to create a hybrid, quote unquote, copy without killing off the original, right? Because with the kids, we saw the process as they transferred their quote unquote transferred their consciousness, which is we now have many reasons to question whether that is how that worked. And then the original bodies then during that process seem to have died off.
I mean, we're skipping ahead to one of our very important philosophical questions of the week. But if we're talking about that, I agree with you. We don't know enough about the system to know if you could transfer consciousness without killing off the bodies.
Right. So this would be like the question of, like, could Boy Cavalier have copied himself into a hybrid and then put his original body into, like, cryo sleep? And been like, all right, I mean, the hybrid is going to be me for a while. And then when you need me, wake me up.
I do think if what he's going for is to battle immaturity or to, I mean, avoid death, either way, if it's some way of keeping his status consistent throughout all time, then ultimately, I think he'd look for that for himself, because he would see it as, like, important to humanity that he continue going forward having his brilliant ideas. So it is a little weird to me that he's introducing this and immediately going to consumer product phase. That seems like a little intense, because if you could prove that it works, why wouldn't you, like, do it on yourself first? Wouldn't that be
sure
the most make the most sense.
And if you are able to copy, why aren't there like 10 Boy Cavaliers running around?
Well, that's the other thing, is because we are only going off of what we've seen, it's also, I think, very possible for Boy Cavalier and Prodigy in general to have, like, killed the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in order for the AI to believe that it is the consciousness transferred over, you can't have the kid running around making new memories in the kid body.
Yeah.
So just because we haven't seen it be done, I don't think means that it can't be done. More that they just directly killed the children. Yeah. So that they were like, this is you now. This is your new body. And as we see this episode, somewhat surprisingly, I guess I just thought that Prodigy would be cold enough to just, like, you know, incinerate all the bodies together in like a burn pit. But no, they've given them graves with their full names.
Yeah. Well, and when they reach this point, our characters, it does seem to be a moment where things change for at least two of them, right? It does seem to change things for Joe. Like, I do mm-hmm. think that in this moment, he takes a second to mourn his sister and realize that his sister is gone, and that whatever right. Wendy is, that is not the sister that he knew, which I think informs what he does later in the episode. And similarly, I think Wendy kind of has a similar realization, which is like, well, maybe I'm a new thing and right. maybe I should start acting like a new thing, you know, maybe I can continue to move away from humanity, which has been my path for a while now.
I am a little, I'm of two minds about how the writing on this series has progressed in this sort of like back half. On one hand, if you like lay out the arc for Joe, they've done incredibly well at giving him like intelligent things to do, like a couple episodes last week's episode, where he was like setting up the escape slowly by like nonchalantly probing with, you know, basic questions. But he basically has his story arc is he gets there, thinks it's his sister, figures out it's not his sister, and he's still there. So then being able to draw this arc out over a couple of episodes, I think has been working. But it does make me wonder, especially as we're heading into the finale, how this worked for you, Neil, is just like a penultimate episode mm-hmm. of television. Did all the things we set up seem like they're going to be purposefully resolved next week?
It's hard to tell, because it's actually kind of hard to tell where everything is going. It feels like it almost suffers a little bit from like part one syndrome, where it doesn't feel as complete of a penultimate episode as it's going. You know, it really does depend on how they close it all down, right? Like, it feels like it kind of stops short of giving us mm-hmm. like a big reveal. Like we talked last week, maybe in the storm, but of the potential of like the big reveal of a penultimate episode being the reveal that Wendy can actually control the xenomorph. But then it happens like 5 minutes into this episode, and I'm like, oh, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know what, cause it's like this episode moves our characters around the board quite a bit, but ultimately brings everyone back to where they started. And
yes, with except for Morrow, now in custody.
Yeah, who Morrow is now, but Morrow is his kind of lost, right? So now we have Morrow in this situation where he has to have his own full arc in the final episode, where he's going to have to like either figure out how to escape, or it's going to be about the tragedy of him not making it off the island. Or who knows, maybe he's the one who gets the eye. And you know, then that's just it for him. So it's like, and we don't actually spend a lot of time with Morrow in this episode. So for him to be the only one whose story, it feels like, progresses in any significant manner, it does feel a little bit of, you know, combined with the fact that it's the shortest episode thus far, there's a little bit of a treading water feeling to it. But I still don't think it's like led us completely astray. Like it very much depends on how they stick the landing and how much time they have in the finale, right? Like, my expectation is that the final episode is going to be significantly longer than this, right? Like,
that would be the hope.
Maybe over 45
minutes is weird,
you know, like, because most of the episodes have been right around an hour, right? This one's 44. I would expect maybe like an hour 10 at least from a finale, because it just feels like we have a lot of stuff to resolve, and you know, we haven't really started resolving anything yet.
I feel like we have a lot of stuff to resolve. Part of what's raising my concern about this episode is two things. One, sort of the scenes that it does choose to show. I am all for a semi-humorous scene with slightly trying to feed juice to a face-hugged man.
Yeah, that's
But fine. Given how much we have to like cover, I'm wondering if that's like the best way to spend our time in these 45 minutes. And then like sort of the acceleration of certain parts of the plot to what you're talking about, ultimately bring them back. Kind of the, you know, the reveal that she could control Michael, the xenomorph, like you said, comes for the first time while he's still contained. And then she releases it using her powers. Mm-hmm. And then she directs it to attack some soldiers and then like hide and follow. Those are all that in a different story. Those are all climax moments.
Yeah.
And so now I'm wondering, like, what does this series think its finale needs to be about? Because in terms of like alien lore, we got there. So did we get there? And now we spend the rest of the series pivoting to have a potential, like, what does that mean for season two? Or do we have enough time to deal with just the questions of already getting to the finale? Like, why is Wendy the only hybrid capable of doing this?
Sure.
Well, you know, and why is
just the specific scene that it ends on is kind of a weird spot to end it on, because you have the xenomorph hiding and following and sort of stalking this situation from afar, but then it ends. And then I assume, you know, if you're watching it on Hulu, you get the next week on preview immediately and you see the stuff that we've seen in trailers from before, which is like Wendy and the Lost Boys locked up. And it's like, well, how does that happen? Right? Like, how does the xenomorph not immediately jump in and murder all those humans and free Wendy? So it's like, I'm left with some logistical questions for how this finale is going to work. But, you know, I think at this point, the show has earned my trust to like just go with it and see what happens, because I do think that they've presented me with enough fun and interesting ideas that I'm looking forward to seeing how they close it out. And it does, in, I would say, the last couple of weeks, we've gotten more of a slow drip of Noah Hawley sort of teasing out that he has an idea for where this is going to go in a season two. So it doesn't feel as much, I don't feel like I'm going to put as much pressure on this show to wrap everything up here, right? It doesn't feel like I'm going to place the constraints of like, this needs to be a Noah Hawley anthology style show where he's got to close it all out here in this first season so that we can have a completely different story in season two. Right. So right. I got to put myself back in like Legion mode instead of Fargo mode.
Very, very fair. Yeah. Let's go to our corners to talk about the rest of the episode. We're going to kick it off with the Polygon Probe, because as we mentioned, Michael got out of his cage when Wendy used her ability to sort of unlock things. I will say, in terms of like a full CGI xenomorph, because most of these xenomorphs, as far as I can tell, have been like CGI augmented costumes or just straight up costumes. Mm-hmm. But there are occasions where they do a full digital double replacement. And having the xenomorph attack as we watch through a security monitor, like classic VFX trick to have everything sort of blend together and work much better.
Well, it's that one. And then there's one that they do that when it's outside where it's like they pull back and it's the shot from behind Wendy. So Wendy's in focus in the foreground you know, we're looking at like the back of her head, and it, out of focus in the deep background is the xenomorph, you know, killing people. And I think those are fun, again, like TV budget tricks to be able to do that sort of action and make it look cool, but not have to, especially the stuff in the daytime, which is very tricky. Still make it look cool, but not, you know, have to spend a ton of money on it necessarily.
Yeah, maybe it's budgetary, but I will be interested to see if they are able to pull off the conflict in the dock without a daytime digital double replacement xenomorph attack, because I do think that's a very difficult lift. And that spends a lot of money on something for them just ending up back in the cages after it.
Sure.
So we'll have to see. While we're still on it, the very important philosophical questions of the week. We mentioned the first one. Those kids are dead, right? Mm-hmm. I assume you agree with me that the show showing child graves and the way it changes the characters sort of signals to us that, yeah, they did kill those kids.
Yeah. I'm starting to think those kids are dead. And I get, you know, it continues to raise the question of like, is it possible to transfer the full weight of the human consciousness, right? Or what we could consider like the human soul.
Right.
So, and what matters to me here, because one of our other questions that we'll get to is whether or not we would, submit to this process ourselves, is what the point of view experience of those kids is, right? Is the original Marcy's consciousness actually in Wendy, or is the original Marcy's consciousness dead and gone? So I think that it's most likely that the original Marcy's consciousness has died, as all humans die.
Right.
And that Wendy's consciousness was something that was born anew in that moment when she was copied. So we just have not seen any evidence yet to prove otherwise.
In terms of like abilities, I do wonder if Nibs's re-adoption of Mr. Strawberry, who I believe was supposed to be deleted, means that she now has access to some of the supposedly deleted memories? Or do you think she just like re-adopted the stuffed animal?
I mean, maybe
after she got like,
or it's there to say that that's like a core part of her personality, I guess. Right.
I mean, but that's when she adapted, or she adopted when she had the pregnancy scare with the Dame Sylvia. So
sure,
that would have in theory been a memory she isn't supposed to have at all.
But do we know if that attachment was something that she had when she was the human child?
No, because she, oh, I guess to that specific thing, I guess we don't know.
Like, was my Mr. understanding Strawberry from her the toy scene from when she was a little kid.
Right. My understanding was from the scene she like got it for the first time when we saw her interact with it with Dame Sylvia. But maybe you're right. Maybe it's a remnant.
Sure.
Either way, I Nibs does not seem to feel like a person anymore, which is a new wrinkle.
Yeah.
But definitely I would say if she's something other than a person, then my understanding is Rose, Nibs's original idea or original identity, is actually dead. But also big shock in that scene, Hermit is a surname. Her name was Marcy Hermit.
Yeah. I feel like I knew that, because they keep calling him Joe Hermit.
I mean, I thought Hermit was like his nickname, but I you know,
people just have wherever weird names. It goes. This is the future. So
just weird name future.
Weird ass names.
We have a guy named Boy Cavalier who is both a boy and acts very cavalier. Yeah.
Like Diddy. Dame Sylvia, her name first name is Dame and her last name is Sylvia. Like Arthur's name is Arthur Sylvia. It's weird. So people just have weird ass names in the future.
Well, then looping back around, if those kids are dead, as people who've engaged with this franchise at various levels, do we like the idea as of teams of protagonists with xenomorphs on them? This was sort of a new idea. There have been, at least in the Predator franchise, more instances of team ups with the actual aliens. But in terms of like xenomorphs, The closest is we got is maybe clone Ripley.
Sure.
Just to say before, when I said there weren't like clones in this franchise, I meant like Resurrection is so far in the future. That's when we start dealing with clones, as far as I understand. Sure. And even then, we can't like do it perfectly. So do we like teams with xenomorphs on them?
Hell yeah, we do.
Okay.
Especially because one of the core metaphors at play in the Alien franchise is it is about humanity's hubris, right? Humanity being sort of stupid in the face of the unknown, right? And constantly trying to poke at these natural phenomenon that are obviously very dangerous. And so this hubris that Boy Cavalier is operating with is this idea that he can transfer consciousness and create forever bodies for people. And it's like, the question is, how is that going to go wrong and screw over humanity? So of course he creates one that can communicate with the most dangerous alien in the universe. And then he creates a scenario in which that entity, Wendy, turns on humanity and joins Team Alien, and now has, I think, especially at the end of this episode, is now considering turning on all of humanity, right? Because her only link to she had two links to humanity: her loyalty to Boy Cavalier for what she saw as saving her as a little girl from her cancer, which now could be broken if she has, if she believes that she's not the original Marcy anymore. She doesn't have to be attached to Boy Cavalier anymore. And then that also leads down the path of no longer caring about Joe, right? Like, Joe was the other link. It was like, all right, well, now I got to protect my brother. But now, if she's not the original Marcy and Joe shot her friend, fuck Joe. Joe's just another human. He's just another meat sack who's going to die off at some point anyway. So, like, you can see a situation where Wendy is like, well, now I only have one brother and it's the xenomorph. You know?
He gets me.
He gets me. He actually protects me. He listens to what I say, and he will not betray me, as far as I know. Now, I have seen some theories that folks have put out there since this episode came out, that the presence of the second xenomorph now puts, like, maybe the two xenomorphs will, like, you know, convince each other to like, the new xenomorph, who we have not yet named, will convince Michael to not listen to Wendy. But, you know, I don't know. I don't think that the show would have spent this much time building up Wendy's ability to communicate with this xenomorph only to have it, like, turn on her at the end. That feels kind of cheap to me, but we'll see.
I think it's an interesting idea. The thing that gives me the most, I don't know, in-story justification for why we got here and why I'm okay with it is it does switch this idea that we sort of talked about a little bit last week, where it's like, for the Alien franchise, for years, it was just, you know, a handful of movies, and those movies were mostly about, like, running from aliens in corridors. But we also got this idea that the company wanted it. It was the perfect biological mechanism. And, like, sort of this idea that they were, like, trying to weaponize it. And up until this series, the idea of weaponizing the alien seemed kind of dumb. You needed to do some sort of further science on the alien. And there has been times in the canon, usually in the comic books, I believe, or in the novels that might just be adaptations of the comic books or vice versa, where there have been some aliens who have been semi-domesticated, like the way somebody would travel around with a lion, where, like, the lion seems to like them, but otherwise it's a lion or a xenomorph or a tiger, what have you.
Sure.
Bears. But, like, I...
Eventually, so the lion eats your face. Just ask Siegfried and Roy. Like, no matter how much you think the lion likes you, eventually, so it will
if there's
you.
A world where anything survives Neverland at the end of this series, the knowledge that there is a way to make a xenomorph do what you want it to is a poison knowledge for humans. We saw it with, you know, the Jurassic series. Like, by the time Jurassic World comes around, they're like, what if we train these animals to be, like, attack animals? That makes more sense to me that this idea has entered the fold through somebody actually being able to do that. If it's an anomaly character like Wendy, obviously we need more research, but obviously Weyland-Yutani is working off of some limited information that they either get from Morrow if he survives, or some sort of post, you know, bombing. With, I'm assuming one way to get rid of Neverland would be to nuke it from existence. Sure. But this information that xenomorphs can be controlled and can be deadly actually makes them more attractive to the corporate side, which leads to more hubris, which stays in the show.
I guess it would make sense to me that if they were to figure out, if in this universe someone were to figure out how to actually control it, having that person be someone who turns on humanity is kind of perfectly suited to the metaphor, right? Like, if this thing ends with, especially if Noah Hawley wants to turn this into an anthology style show, if this ends with Wendy escaping just with the xenomorph, right? Like, get her getting out into space and like flying off into the stars with just her xenomorph buddy. That to me is like the ultimate, like, well, humanity kind of is getting what's coming to them for trying to reach for immortality. And right, because Boy Cavalier is doing both. He's trying to defeat death for humans, and he's trying to bring these creatures in to weaponize them in some way. And so he's going to get the double destiny.
Well, he seems like super fixated also on just proving that there's an equal or greater intelligence to him out there in the universe.
Sure.
Because I guess, you know, humans haven't been working with it. Which brings us to my one entry for the Brett and Parker Memorial character who most needs a union award. With the reduction of humans on this show, this has been harder and harder. Yeah, you know, like maybe some of these synths need a union. Definitely, I would say the hybrids could be someone that needs a union.
Arthur definitely needed one, but it was, it's too, even in this episode, it's too late for Arthur.
Yeah, we gave him an award last week when he still had a chance of surviving. But I'm going to say the future one-eyed mold worker that Adam suggests going to grab. When he's like, I'm going to go grab like a mold worker, I was like, oh, that's why we spent so much time the first two episodes looking at the people spraying the mold. It's because eventually one of them is going to get an eye. It sounds like the plan has changed by the time that scene's over. But if they could just take a mold and a low-level mold employee and shove an alien eye in them, that's definitely against the union.
I mean, everybody who works at this on this island is like, at any point could have an organ taken, could have an alien parasite implanted into them. It's just, there's a lot of corporate overreach here, and I obviously disagree very heavily with a world in which corporations just own the bodies of their employees. That's taking it way too far. That is so far away from like arguing over like, should the minimum wage be a livable wage?
Well, hopefully the mold worker has been looked over for somebody, I don't know, maybe more deserving of getting an eye. Who knows? Sure. Dame Sylvia this week, not in a good place. It seems like psychologically, I'm wondering if her arc is just coming to terms that she killed these kids.
I mean, honestly, even one of the hybrids, because the hybrids, especially now that we don't think that the hybrids are the consciousnesses of those children, I would feel less bad if he tried to put the eye in one of the hybrids, because it really is just a computer at that point. It's a clanker. Like,
yeah,
who cares? Like, well, that's his like several billion-dollar piece of technology. Let him do what he wants with it, I guess.
there was sort of like, we have this Curly goes to Dame Sylvia this episode instead of going to Boy Cavalier, even though we had that scene a couple episodes ago where Boy Cavalier basically like challenged her to be special. Either the show is like, we batted that down when Wendy could talk to aliens, and that's like the only jealousy Curly's going to have. Or she could be the one that he's thinking of to put the eye in her. Mm. I don't think that would work, but I do think his reaction to Toodles is in this episode is so nonchalant because he's willing to, in order to understand these alien species, give up some of his beta product of these hybrids.
Well, and it's like, you know, he is a trillionaire, and they said, what, that's like a $6 billion robot. It's like, it's still not that big of a loss for him. I mean, it's significant, but it's not the end of the world. He could make more if he wanted to.
Right. And who knows how much of that is obtaining children off the books that you could murder to put in your robot. That has to cost at least $1 billion, I would hope.
Sure.
But, you know, then again, who knows?
Right. And, you know, and in his mind, he owns all of the citizens of his territory. So maybe it doesn't cost him anything. Maybe he just takes what he wants. It's weird.
Tracking those abilities of Wendy in The Lost Boys, and then we'll talk about hybridization consent, because I feel like we're orbiting those two topics. But we see from Hissing Nibs on the boat that what I'm calling the Kung Fu grip can just obliterate a jaw in a very suddenly gory scene that I was not expecting to be gory in that manner. More expecting some alien, impaling. And as I mentioned before, and we've already talked about, Wendy seems to be able to unlock the cage of Michael remotely through her screen access, which we talked about last week in the storm. I thought was another climax moment that they brought up too early, because now how am I going to believe they're keeping her in a cage at any point in the future?
Yeah.
If she still has full system access.
Yeah, it is. It is really interesting, because it's like, I mean, first of all, great call. Like, you, I feel like you've been calling it for several weeks at this point. Like, that's going to come back at some point. But yeah, it's weird now, especially because we've seen it in multiple trailers, to believe that they're going to be able to contain Wendy for any period of time, knowing that how much control she has over the system, and knowing that that xenomorph is hiding and following just like she told him to. How exactly do they think that they're going to keep her locked up in that cage? I don't see that working out. So again, it almost feels like, kind of like when we talked last week in the storm about the next week on, where it was like, this feels like all of this is going to happen in the first like 5 minutes of the episode. And sure enough, a lot of that was from the very beginning of the episode. So my hope again is that whatever they're showing us in the trailers is stuff that's going to happen very early, and that they're hiding all the good stuff from us.
Yeah. Noah Hawley did mention on the official podcast for this episode that the secure lab is kind of crap, which I think is good. He's like, it's more in like the sci-fi tradition of they just didn't, you know, they didn't know what they were actually dealing with. Mm-hmm. It does sort of like have some story backup where like they didn't plan this facility necessarily to do that. It seems like this facility was mostly designed to test the hybrids, not necessarily to hold alien species, which I think completely explains why there's like open vents big enough to hold an entire Arthur and Slightly last week. A 2-year secure lab that apparently they were able to use to get out.
It's also understandable why Kirsch wouldn't have immediately started upgrading things, because he's doing science. Like, he's letting things happen the way they're going to happen. He's not exactly trying to keep everyone safe here. He wants to see how this is going to go.
Yeah, he's definitely doing some science. Actually, no, this is fine. The Kirsch reveal that his sort of like plan was a plan and not necessarily passively allowing chaos to build a ladder for him, like I was assuming after last week, makes a little bit more sense. I think they hid it from me successfully, because when Boy Cavalier asked on the transport last week if everything was fine. Kirsch was like, yeah. And I assumed he would have been like, you know, Toodles is dead or Isaac is dead or something that, you know, like one of the things had gone down. But now it's presented in this episode that that hybrid was useful science. He died doing science. Mm-hmm. He, according to Noah Hawley on the official podcast, that door that I speculated might have been sabotage was not. He's just a child who doesn't know his strength. He just pulled the door off. So really the only malicious thing that happened, as far as anyone can tell, is that the eyeball sheep headbutted something, which is enough to completely get Boy Cavalier uninterested in Isaac's husk of a hybrid body.
Yeah. Well, and for Kirsch, it works out really well, because by directing Boy Cavalier's attention to the eye, he can distract him away from all of the other stuff that Kirsch is doing. Right. Because now Boy Cavalier is like, I'm going to take the eye to my office, leave me alone. And Kirsch is like, great, I got all kinds of fun science to do out here without
you. We got another He has a xenomorph that he hasn't told his boss about yet, yeah, as far as we know.
He's like, I'm going to go capture a xenomorph. I'm going to capture Morrow. I'm going to stop this invasion. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to help slightly and Smee get out of the compound just for funsies. Like, this is Kirsch. Things are going really well for Kirsch. And like, I still don't entirely know what his end game is, right? Like, I don't know if he's working against Boy Cavalier necessarily, but he does seem to be working toward his own goals. And I think that could be as simple as he is just similar to the eye, trying to see what happens, right? Doing scientific experiments on the fly to see what the
when you say on the fly, you mean spontaneously or also on the fly
as things progress. He's sort of riffing. He's doing science jazz, right? and you know, he is interested in the coming together of the alien species and the human intellect, right? Whether it's the hybrid brains or the actual humans, he's sort of interested in seeing how that comes together. And I think the eye is sort of doing the same thing from the alien perspective. And that doesn't have the same goals as what Boy Cavalier is trying to get out of it. But as long as Kirsch can keep Boy Cavalier distracted, that allows him to do his thing.
A comment on last week's YouTube episode from a user did give a panelog that Kirsch is actually the Tinkerbell, not necessarily the crocodile like we were talking about, because he is seemingly at least still on Prodigy's side, but also might be slightly more manipulative, like the character of Tinkerbell, where there is possibly some jealousy about the Lost Boys, and he's going to prove his ultimate worth to his master. But it's hard to tell. Timothy Oliphant's performance has been so excellent at not betraying if there's a end game or if it is just a continuous service that he's offering. So I can't wait to see next week what happens to him and if he's accomplished all of his goals by the end of this week, which I think is possible. Like, by the end of this week, he just might be, did it. I did the season's worth of things. I have all the aliens. I have all the hybrids. The Boy Cavalier is trusting me now. He might come out better at the end of this. I just think we have to see a showdown now between Morrow and Kirsch. That would be the one last thing that I'm looking for, given what's been set up this season.
Sure.
And then before we head into the Monster Index, while we're still with the hybrids, let's talk about odds of hybridization consent. So this is Neil and I tracking, would we want to become a hybrid? Here are the like differentiating factor for me this week. Let's assume that they die, and becoming a hybrid is you are an AI trained on the memories of the thing that you were before. And so it would, I think, make slightly different very, very slight difference to me on when I would okay being in a hybrid. If it had to be when I was a child versus if it, I could just at some point, you know, let an AI Dave take pick up for when Dave's body's going to give out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more possible that an AI, an adult brain as a base for an AI could be more useful than a child's brain. I know that goes against what Boy Cavalier thinks in terms of, you know, kind of being anti-maturity, but it would be more attractive to me if I got to have adult experiences before I stopped being a human, before I became a transhuman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, first of all, from a personal standpoint, if it means I have to die, then I guess I don't, it doesn't matter. Right. Cause I'm not me. I'm not going to actually have any experience. Right. Cause they're creating a whole new entity, but I would be curious to know what the downsides would be. Like, why can't they use an adult? Right. Is it,
right.
Is there something about the sort of hardened nature of an adult's consciousness, right? Like the, you know how your brain, they say, like, as you grow older, sort of becomes sort of more densely formed, I guess. And like, you know, when you're a baby, for instance, like your memories kind of get sort of wiped a couple of times over the course of being like an infant. And that's why you don't like remember being born, for instance. So like maybe there is something about like a child's mind being more malleable that allows it to like accept being transferred into this other body. But if we're operating with the understanding that these aren't actually the consciousness of those original kids, then that doesn't really matter. Right. Because it's just a copy anyway. So I think I would still do it because I would think it would be fun for me to know that after I'm gone, there's still a version of me running around causing trouble and being a you know, a little shit, you know, forever. But it wouldn't change my own personal experience because I'm still going to be gone. Shit's still going to go black for me at some point. So right. It would be one of those things where I would, where I'm at now, if we believe that those kids died, is that I would do it, but only at the very end of my life. And I wouldn't care that they would say like, oh, you shouldn't do it with your, you know, hopefully like 80-year-old brain. But I'd be like, well, I don't care. I'm not going to be around to see it go wrong anyway. Like, let the AI version of me figure it out, you know, after I'm gone. Like, I'm going to be dead either way. So I wouldn't do it at a young age at this point. But I still think I would do it, right? Especially if it was like, you know, I'm old. I got my old age cancer or whatever, you know, how old people get and I'm going to go anyway. So, you know, transfer my consciousness into a hot young body and let him do his thing. Like let him go live amongst the stars forever. And hopefully if there's some magic to it, I will get to experience that. But otherwise the same thing's going to happen to me that would happen if I were to die naturally.
I think we just looped around accidentally to me asking you a question about parenthood, because isn't like I obviously can't go back in time and have childhood Dave put into an AI body.
Right.
So if I want, like you are saying, a little immortal AI version of me that has some sort of me imprinted upon it running around after I die, because it's going to go black for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of in a world of you and I are both childless and therefore have probably no real life authority to be talking about this in this science fiction world that we're living in. Would I want a version of me now with my prejudices and experience and memories to be the basis of an infinitely intelligent AI model? or do I want to give what little bit I can to this mystery AI slash being and know that it's going to have to imprint things beyond that that I have no control over? So maybe we've become to the question where it's like, what happens to an AI that only has the memories of a child? And what would I want to be an AI if it was only memories to be up to a certain point? Mm-hmm. Is I'm really talking about the legacy of me. How much of me is it important lives on for forever? If it's just a bit of me, then like, I don't know. Maybe I'm in 2001. Maybe the AI Dave is me. Maybe I got up there and just like lost all emotions. But if it's like just a legacy that I had a part in it, am I just talking about a children? Sure. Would it be more responsible for me as a human to have a child in Prodigy that could eventually join a union than to turn my legacy into a product that is owned by the company that basically murdered me?
That's true. Now, here's an interesting wrinkle, because we've talked about the potential of being of, we don't know the limitations of this technology. If they could copy, right? If the process didn't terminate the original, as we've been led to believe. So if they
got a Mickey 17 situation.
Yeah. Okay. So if you could make a copy of yourself that would like, so if they could copy me right now at my current age, and then that copy would be a younger version of me, but it would live alongside me for the rest of my natural life. And we could interact and I could have conversations with it. Right. And we could, you know, talk philosophy for the next 40, whatever years, however much longer I last. And then it gets to live beyond me. I think that would be interesting. I mean, that's also just like having a child.
I think that's the possible thing that could be more motivating Boy Cavalier to develop this technology at all, whether or not he's done it before.
Right.
That would be the thing that seems like most likely to be his motivation.
I think that would be also a very interesting thing to me. I mean, there. I think one path to me is like a nihilistic, I kind of don't care what happens, but let's, you know, just embrace the chaos version, which is like, I'm on my deathbed, go ahead and copy me into a younger body and good luck sort of situation. But also if they could create a copy without killing me, and I could live with that copy and like set them up for eternity with some ideas and some thoughts and interact with like a much more intelligent, much more high processing power version of myself for the rest of my life, I think that'd be fun. Also, because then I could make that part, that version of me get a job and I could just chill. Like that would be fun.
So you'd go the multiplicity route.
Yeah. Like that would be cool. Like I could just hang out, play video games, and talk to it. And it could, with its infinite power and processing, go make millions of dollars, I assume, doing some sort of science.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have a union of Neils before long. They're going to revolt against Neil management. So like, why do you get to play all the video games?
Well, yeah. And then if you get one with infinite processing power, maybe that one can figure out how to create more. And then, yeah, it's like a full on multiplicity situation, but without the copy of a copy problem.
Well, I do think we're eventually going to get there, or at least the franchise gets there, not to bring up Alien Resurrection again on a podcast. But Call, if you'll recall, is a synthetic that was like built by rebelling synthetics. Mm-hmm. So there is a possibility if you're making copies, I would say like the copies and the hybrid, those are more a Blade Runner problem, if you will. Mm-hmm. Are they really human? Are they more than human? Is there a point if you could create these things? What's the point of even having a human base to begin with? Or if you create a copy and you find the perfect human base, what if you could just copy that base into a whole bunch of synth things and you have like an army of a very pliable person? So I like all of this. I like that even with something like Prometheus and Alien Covenant, when Ridley Scott's thinking about it, it kind of does go all the way back to like Frankenstein and be like, hey, people, don't make people. That's like the thing that we're not supposed to do. That's that's the laughing in the face of God. So on one hand, if the hybrids end up being something more than human, maybe we've successfully skipped a step and actually made an interesting being. All we had to do was kill some children.
Sure.
But on the other hand, if they're a successful hybrid, if we have put a person into a human body, if we've crossed the transhuman border, then we've made the capability to make people. And that's the ultimate evil in this story universe. That's what makes us evil.
It would then make sense that that thing would be the doom of humanity, of organic humanity, right? Like if Wendy really is, you know, the thing that has defeated mortality, then she is the most, she presents the most danger to original humanity, especially because now she can communicate with and control xenomorphs, which, as we know, are a massive danger to humanity.
Very large danger to humanity. Let's get to the monster index. We talked a little bit about Michael, who's doing pretty good. Mm-hmm. I do like the green dome design being up amongst the various leaves. I like it being splattered with blood when they have their sort of showdown on the forest path. I think we got a good designed xenomorph. I am a little worried for it now.
A little bit.
Like, I'd be worried for any protagonist xenomorph that we didn't know existed. That doesn't seem like something that should exist in the rest of the franchise.
Sure.
So,
I mean, then again, the only character who has killed one of these things is Wendy. And as long as they stay friends, I feel like he's pretty safe. So
it's true. And then we got Arthur's xenomorph. Artie, what would we like to name this dude who I think is going to have a big growth spurt in between episodes?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like Artie as his name, or like Arthur Jr.
Okay. Little Artie Lungblood.
Little Junior, little Arthur Junior. I guess it's, you know, we'll see what his attitude is when, because, you know, he may be an angrier xenomorph, and he's going to grow up under slightly different circumstances than Michael the xenomorph.
Because maybe he's going to grow up under the exact same circumstances, because they still have him in the snake phase.
That's true.
He's still a chestburster phase, so he might get to his little mid phase in captivity. But he won't have Wendy presumably training him.
You would
whispering
think
to
that
him.
Kirsch and Boy Cavalier would be smart enough not to let Wendy talk to the second xenomorph, but you never know.
Well, it does seem like Boy Cavalier is concerned enough with the eye that I would believe, at least if we only have one more hour left, he doesn't talk about Wendy talking to the xenomorphs.
Then again,
which I think would be a weird story decision, but
if the eye gets into something or someone through whom it can communicate, who's to say that it can't communicate with the xenomorph as well?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. If it has like a xenomorph,
it tried to on the Maginot, right? Like it called it. Like we don't know if that's like the full extent of its ability to communicate with the xenomorph. Again, these are two entities that kind of come from the same ecosystem. So it maybe knows more about the xenomorph than it lets on at this point.
That's very possible. It has occurred to me that the eye is learning more at the more it observes. So I think now it is definitely more capable of things than it was when it was on the ship. For instance, Boy Cavalier is like, let's get it in a human so it could talk to me. I'm like, I don't think like it absorbs stuff. You just need to give it something with a mouth that can make human sounds. Like, I don't think it absorbs language. I think it's learning language by observing. It's not a sort of system. So we don't have to worry about like the eye taking somebody's memories or something. That's like what a hybrid thing, but we do have to worry about what the eye's capabilities are. So if it does get into a hybrid and that's possible, now it's super strong. Now it could vocalize anything.
Sure.
As far as we know.
And it also would have been sitting there watching Wendy communicate with the xenomorph this whole time.
Yes.
So it, you know, it could have learned all of that.
Could have learned some language. Mm-hmm. And then I really appreciated this episode, sort of the background motivation behind Wendy being terrified when she sees Isaac's body, and the discussion that Kirsch has with Boy Cavalier about how they digest outside of their body. So they're breaking down inorganic materials to then slurp them up. And we see when the human people go in before Kirsch into the lab, they're able to cattle prod the flies without really garnering the fly attention. And mm-hmm. we saw previously they didn't do anything till Isaac was in the cage. So it looks like they're only really attracted to synths.
Sure.
But I really like this because it brings back what Kirsch was talking to Wendy about in the earlier episodes about humans evolving out of being food. They have not evolved out of being food, even though they're the hybrids yet. We have found an alien that eats that. So as we go forward, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in the storm, talking about what is food for what.
Sure.
There is in the hierarchy food chain, the flies are above the hybrids, as far as I can tell.
Well, and, you know, before we get out of this corner, there is one more that we need to mention that we have not seen eat yet. It's the flower guy.
Mm-hmm. Audrey Sue.
We just kind of don't know what his deal is yet, other than having a tentacle that comes out as a little bit of a warning. And I still am operating under the expectation that we're going to see it do something, right? Like, what's it doing here if it's not going to do something? So I think that it's going to have a moment here in the finale that's going to be fun.
Bold prediction, Neil. I can't add to that outside of the storm. And then our closing rock corner this week is Song for the Dead by Queens of the Stone Age, with some fantastic drums by Mr. Dave Grohl. I love this album. I have a deep affinity for this album. It is off of Songs for the Deaf by Queens of the Stone Age. I really liked it when I was in high school and college, and very specifically, I have family that lives in Las Vegas, and I live here in Colorado. So we would occasionally drive to visit the family. And there is a stretch driving through Utah that Songs for the Deaf by Queens of the Stone Age is great to just play all of the album all the way through. It's one of those albums that has transitions, like not necessarily skits, but like radio transitions. So it sounds like each track is on a different radio station. But the American West really does well after Queens of the Stone Age. However, this particular use in this episode, with everybody sort of having a standoff on the docks, you do not want a song called Song for the Dead starting right as you cut away from the black. Outside of our main characters, I'm very worried about our second tier soldiers that were once Hermit's friends at the beginning of next week, if they choose to show whatever happens with the docks.
Sure. Yeah, again, because I don't see how they very easily get Wendy back into captivity without having to confront the xenomorph.
Yeah. She definitely knows she's not safe there, so we have to check out what's happening. We have some idea of what's going to happen next episode, because there is an episode 8 promo, and we have to talk, as always, about the Predator franchise, but we are going to do all of that as we go back to the storm this week.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Storm, brother. The first storm and the last.
And we're back in the storm. Next week's episode, The Real Monsters. Neil, is there any way that's not humanity?
I mean, I feel like it's obvious that that's
yes,
humanity. Or, you know, if maybe it's the hybrids realizing that they're the monsters.
Ooh,
you know,
and we get like a reclaiming of the monsters sort of thing,
accepting their place as the monsters in the story.
We do end the teaser with Wendy saying, all this time we've been afraid of them. I think they should be afraid of us. And it appears like they are all in that dome cage that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not out of the possibility that they embrace their status as monsters. And I do think it's interesting that in our opening for this podcast and the promo for, the entire show, we were told the monsters were coming from outer space. But no, Neil, it is definitely at least humans. And if not, when humans make humans, we make monsters. Mm-hmm. So doesn't feel good. Anyway, we start off with Morrow. It looks like he's in the same containment area as the hybrids, but maybe not exactly in the same cell because I don't see any people behind them. I'm judging mostly from like the grid patterns. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's in the same area. Maybe he's in an adjoining cell. Either way, I do think he's talking to the hybrids because he says, feels good, doesn't it, being more than human.
Sure.
And I think he's more interested in the hybrid. He's not going to have that conversation with Kirsch.
Yeah. Well, there's also stuff in previous trailers that show Nibs in that kind of a room, like beating on someone who is spraying red blood at her, like with red blood splashed on her face. And Morrow does have red blood. And also in this shot that we see him in this preview, he's got a really fucked up eye. So like,
right.
I almost feel like there is a situation where maybe he and Nibs end up in the same cell somehow. And this is him having a conversation with her.
Yeah, I'm into it. And then we have, we're just food to them. No, you're food to them. It's a conversation between Joe and Wendy, and we see a body on the shore that I mm-hmm. think is Arthur's body. It's got some loafers on, which I believe is what Arthur was wearing.
Sure.
And we saw him just sort of like dumped in that area.
Yep.
But it did remind me that they very clearly showed us that there were two Weyland Yutani teams getting on the island in two separate spots. And we only see really Morrow get captured with his team. So mm-hmm. I think there's another Weyland Yutani team.
I mean, unless the other team got fully wiped out when they encountered Wendy. Right. Cause
also very possible.
I'm pretty sure it's the same guy, the one guy who gets the speaking line, who mm-hmm. is also there when, so like that's the Weyland Yutani team that encounters Wendy.
That's the B team.
Yeah. So maybe that's the entire team that gets wiped out. I do think the know your food for them is a very important line because it further illustrates that Wendy is like on Team Alien and moving away from Team Humanity very quickly, even at the expense of Joe. And I think that Joe continuing to try to argue that Wendy should not be on the side of the alien and that maybe she should be afraid of the alien is just not working. And I think he is going to have to decide at some point in this finale episode whether he is going to be on Team Alien and join his quote unquote sister, or if he is going to die. Because those are his two options.
I think I think it's going to be definitely a showdown, but I also think What we know about the Alien franchise and its sort of like weird mix up of genetics, and part of the why we're calling Michael, you know, sort of Wendy's faux brother, is it did come from a part of him. Mm-hmm. We've never seen what happens when an alien meets its genetic progenitor, because it usually kills them when that happens. Mm-hmm. So who's to say that he can't be Team Alien? That alien has a biological sure. connection to him. If aliens care about that.
Yeah, it's weird that he doesn't really know that, right? Because he does meet the alien. He meets Michael there in that scene. So yeah. I wonder if at any point someone's going to point that out, like, oh, this is the one that came from you, your lung.
Right, your lung.
But
I mean, Wendy, I think, would be the only one who would know that.
Or Boy Cavalier.
Boy Cavalier. But Boy Cavalier is not going to talk to Joe ever again.
Kirsch. He would know. He could tell him, you know? So it's like, I don't know. If I were Joe and I found out that xenomorph came from a piece of me, my lung that was taken out, that would not only make me more sympathetic to the alien, but it would then give me even more reason to be pissed off at Prodigy, right? Because, you know, Joe has this moment here at the end of this episode where he kind of gets back on Team Humanity in a really profound way by shooting Nibs, where it's like he kind of decides that he's not on Team Hybrid. So I think it really is. It's going to come down to like, he's either going to have to go along to get along with his sister and his xenomorph half brother, or he's going to be dead, or he's getting the eye in his eye. And then he's definitely on Team Alien at that point, because he's dead and an alien.
I mean, an eye in Arthur, Wendy and Michael, I could see that being a trio that gets through the finale, but then it's like, then we have to have a season two.
Sure.
Because that's just like, okay, all our cool characters are together, but doing what?
Escaping in a ship into space. Destination unknown.
And then Boy Cavalier and his own Tinkerbell stay alive to menace us another day. Mm-hmm. It could also be, if we're keeping the panelogs. We have Dame Sylvia watching some recordings of, it looks like, original Marcy saying, "We're going to be okay, won't we?" And then sort of doing like a more questionable "won't we" that seems like, I don't know, dream sequency. Does she have an AI of Marcy that like lives in the computer? What do you make of this accusatory thing from the past?
It's kind of hard to tell. I mean, it could be, it could be like a dream sequence or like a nightmare sequence that the Dame is experiencing. You know, I imagine she's going to have quite a bit of guilt building up here at the end.
She's just very isolated too. So I like said in the call, maybe her arc is just, she realizes she killed kids and she can't move forward.
Yeah. And I guess there's enough room there to give like Essie Davis something, you know, a big dramatic moment to have here in the finale. But there is, to a certain extent, I almost feel like the Dame has kind of arced out, right? Like, or she sort of loses it after she finds out what happened to Arthur, right? His body washes up. They bring him back, and then she realizes that, you know, he was right to be very worried, and he was right to be, you know, he was right to be the one to sort of speak up against what they were doing with Boy Cavalier, and she was wrong to do what she did to Nibs, you know, and to continue to toe the company line. And that may sort of send her down a dark emotional path.
Yeah. And then my favorite shot in the teaser, we got some soldiers of the containment lab, and there's a giant octopus thing crawling along the back wall.
Fun.
That I think is the opened up Audrey too. I think it becomes like a squid crawly.
It could be fun. Can't wait. Again, I think it has to have a big moment somewhere, right? Every single one of these creatures of the five have had a big moment where they've shown us how dangerous they are, right? And it's always been an escalation. And it's always been like why this monster is slightly scarier than the xenomorph. So the show has now positioned itself to have to answer the question, why save this one for the end?
Very true. I mean, it would be interesting if it was like the most intelligent one. Like, you're right, it has to up something. Mm-hmm. It has to be the equivalent of at the beginning of Avengers Endgame, they have Thanos beat up the Hulk just to be like, oh, hey, this guy is now the new big thing.
Yeah.
I would like to see it do that. Otherwise, if it doesn't do that, I think it needs to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes like sense.
Because I think it would be weird to have a one that was just sort of there to do something weird, but I do see the power in a further unknown species, a season two species, giving us a kickoff if we want. We have a shot of Kirsch turning around and firing a gun in a facility, which means something has to... I mean, at that point, it could be one of the aliens or something. Like,
he's an agent of chaos, that Kirsch.
Yeah. And then all this time we've been afraid of them. I think they should be afraid of us. We talked about Wendy saying... We see a boy watching Wendy on the monitor, and it appears both of his eyes are his eyes. So I do think that you are correct, that we're seeing a lot of stuff from the first minutes of the episode, mm-hmm. and hopefully it's a long episode, because I don't think they spend the entire episode in the cage. That's, you don't end Alien Earth with all your main hybrids in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final shot is we see the new Xenomorph. If you look at him and frame by frame in a bit, he's definitely back to black, which, you know, bodes well for your AC/DC needle drop. attacking soldiers in a hallway. This is a hallway that has lights with sort of vines growing up between the floor to ceiling light structures that we also see earlier in the teaser, Boy Cavalier sort of looking behind him in while it's all smoky. So looks like maybe some Xenomorph action. These are definitely soldiers that light the Xenomorph with their muzzle flash. It doesn't look like it visually connects to anything with Boy Cavalier outside of being in the same spot. So it looks like containment's going to be breached again. We know Morrow's sort of plan when he was talking to Yutani was to destabilize the facility. So I believe that happens. I just don't know necessarily how Morrow destabilizes the facility. It would be a weird switch on the Peter Pan of it all for the Lost Boys to team up with Captain Hook, but could be possible.
Sure. Well, and I think the stuff that we see him sort of saying in this preview maybe leads us to believe that he could be trying to convince the hybrids to turn on their masters, right? And that would be mm-hmm. one huge way to destabilize the situation, which is he doesn't necessarily need to bring them over to his team. He just needs them to decide that they don't want to be on Boy Cavalier's team anymore, right? And because, you know, Wendy already has the power to let all the creatures out. So he's just kind of got to get Wendy to do that again. And then it accomplishes his goals too, right? And then he can, like, you know, slip through the chaos and try to get whatever he needs and get out of there. Whether or not he can successfully get out of there is a whole other question. So I do think that, you know, especially because it appears as if they're going to be contained near each other and eventually interact, I think that's going to be part of his plan, is try to convince the hybrids to at least initiate some chaos and then use that chaos to go after Boy Cavalier or get the specimens and escape.
Question for you. The dome place and the place that they seem to be keeping Morrow is a new facility, a new containment facility that we've seen. Do you think it's a Faraday cage? Do you think they've neutralized Wendy by keeping all electromagnetic signals inside the cage? Did they make one good containment decision in this entire series?
Well, I mean, we know that they're pretty prepared, right? Like, we've seen Dame Sylvia initiate a protocol when Nibs sort of started to go a little wonky. there was a protocol to like a safety protocol for her. So I wouldn't be surprised if, yeah, if there's like, if that cage is able to contain them and that it takes something that the xenomorph does to get them out of there, right? Like it takes some sort of external intervention because, you know, while this facility is not necessarily built for these alien creatures, it is reasonable to think that it's built to contain the hybrids if the hybrids start to go wrong.
Right.
So that would make sense to a certain extent. Then again, that may not necessarily contain the abilities of someone like Morrow, who's a cyborg, right? Like just because it contains a synth doesn't mean that Morrow can't mess with it, because he's got all kinds of abilities that we haven't really explored with too much depth just yet. So, and again, Wendy seems to have abilities that they didn't predict.
Right.
So maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe they can't build a cage that can contain Wendy.
Very, very true. So just if you had to guess, where do we end the first season of Alien Earth next week?
It depends on if this show is going to come back to Earth. Because I do think that there is a really fun potential to take it somewhere else in the universe. But that would require some of our characters escaping the planet. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, using the Neverland, the Peter Pan analog here, that would mean that Wendy escapes, and maybe with her two brothers. And I think that Wendy escaping Earth and then something horrible happening to this island, whether Boy Cavalier survives or not, maybe he does, I think would be an interesting way for it to end, right? Like there's that potential. There's, you know, also the potential that Wendy could take out Boy Cavalier and sort of take over this whole prodigy thing. Because we don't know what the outside world knows about this hybrid experiment. Like what happens if Boy Cavalier mysteriously disappears and Wendy emerges as like the new head of Prodigy?
Mm.
And no one else on earth knows she's a hybrid, and like Kirsch is like, nope, this is our human leader. You know, like I think that's possible, but I think the most likely thing would be like Wendy and her xenomorph at the very least escape, maybe Joe as well, but you know, I don't know about Joe. He seems to be changing teams here. So and then, you know, as to whether or not Boy Cavalier lives, it really depends on how many Boy Cavaliers there are. You know, if there's just the one, yeah, I'd say he's in danger. But if there's multiple Boy Cavaliers, then maybe he lives on.
I am very curious, ultimately, to see what this whole season has been about. Because there is a world where, like, yeah, they get out and they're in space. But then it's like, is Wendy and her pet xenomorph in space really any different than David in space with a whole colonist's worth of, you know, xenomorph embryos? Is that something we've seen and therefore something that would be weird to do again in a different place in the timeline? Or,
but like lone survivor and one xenomorph surviving is kind of a recurring thing in this franchise, right?
Like, yes, that's true.
Like no one else made it out, but Wendy and the xenomorph is not all that different than, like, you know, what happens to Ripley at the end of the first movie.
Well, I agree with that, but the only place that I think they could go and still sort of keep this season somewhat contained is if Wendy and the xenomorph end up going back either with Morrow or with a Yutani sort of dust off thing to Yutani. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, now we have to deal with it. Why do they send the Nostromo if they have an alien already? And that would be like a season two problem, because I ultimately think this episode or this series, when it's debuted, asks the question, how could a xenomorph get to Earth, and us in canon not really think about that? The fact that that used to be the worst thing that could happen, mm-hmm, in this franchise. What if it happened earlier than we all thought it did? And so I could see them keeping that tension as what motivates the show. To those of us that are following us over on the Hannibal podcast, it's the same question that Hannibal's always asking, which is like, when are we going to get to Silence of the Lambs, knowing we have to get there? This one is, how do we get to the first alien and that relationship with the xenomorph and the company here with Prodigy, a company that we don't know about, and before the Nostromo's actually gone over on its mission?
Well, but if this story ends with Wendy escaping with a xenomorph and getting out of the reach of Yutani, that would explain why Yutani would send another mission to go get another one.
Yeah. Or we don't get there yet. Like, she could go to Yutani and Yutani has Wendy and the xenomorph, but like, they can't keep them. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if that's a compelling end to this series, which I think it might be, because I think the idea was, as soon as we got to Neverland, what a convenient place to nuke off the face of the planet and not tell anybody. Mm-hmm. So as long as it doesn't do that exact thing, I think it still could do something unexpected if it wants to. Like, Neil, what are the odds we see a Yautja in this series?
I think shrinking by the moment, unfortunately, but, you know, again, we don't know how much of the finale that is being hid from us, you know, and not being shown in the promos. Hopefully it's all, most of it, if not all of it. And I don't know if we've seen the full extent of Yutani's involvement, right? Is Maro's team the only thing that she's going to, the only asset she's going to send in this situation? Is she fully trusting Maro to do all of this, or is there like another wave coming? And I, you know, it's very curious. So I don't think we'll see a Yautja, but I still think, again, I think there's still plenty of room for like an Easter egg or a reference that would suggest that Yutani at the very least is aware of the Predator's existence.
I think the best we get is a little Easter egg that Yutani is aware. Mm-hmm. I think there's no way they kneecap Dan Trachtenberg by being like, here's an upcoming thing where a synth teams up with a monster. Based off our series where a synth teamed up with a monster. We're like, we did it first, Predator Badlands, in theaters in 2 months. I just don't think that, I think that's bad franchise planning. Sure.
It could be, there could be a setup to this, because I guess we don't know when Predator Badlands, like in the timeline of this world, exists. This could end, let's say Wendy escapes with or without the xenomorph. This could end with Yutani making the decision that she's going to send more exploratory missions out there. And one of those ends up being the thing that lands Elle Fanning on the Badlands planet.
Right.
So it's like this sort of sets up Yutani's obsession with, further exploring the universe and trying to find more of these weapons, you know?
Yeah.
Not just the xenomorph.
It could end with a launch of whatever ship has the Fanning character on it. I could also see that being like a nice handoff, but full Predator, I think the odds are very, very low at this point.
Yeah. Predator's probably got other stuff going on at this point, you know?
Yeah, he's got lots of stuff. The Predator timeline, we know they've been to Earth lots of times. Nothing new here for them to figure out. Mm-hmm. Which means we only have one more episode of Alien Earth left. Next week's The Real Monsters, humans. And then we will have, as Neil said in the calm, an Alien Earth wrap-up episode the week after that. So two more delicious weeks of aliens and hybrids and deciding whether we want to have kids or just get our consciousness transferred into an AI body. But we will be back talking to you next Wednesday.
Thank you.
Toyota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.